So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. In America's Dairyland, any new attempt to regulate rules and regulations on livestock siting generates, well, a lot of communication and dialogue. The State Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has now drafted a second version of what's called ATCP 51, dealing with livestock siting. It was the subject of a press conference in the Capitol yesterday, so there's no greater time for newsmakers on that proposed rule. I want to thank to my left Brad Paff, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Cara O'Connor, Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union, John Holyvote, Director of Government Affairs, the Dairy Business Association. What a subject, right? A lot of interest. Mr. Secretary, it's your rule, it's your agency's rule. Give us the overview of why it's needed, and is this going to replace an old rule?
Well, in 2006, the Wisconsin legislature asked the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection to develop a model ordinance that local units of government would be able to put in place in their jurisdiction to help them in the, with the siting of large-scale animal agriculture. And since 2006, the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection has provided these local units of government with that assistance, that guidance and that assistance. But we need to be clear. Agriculture's changed an awful lot in the last 13 years. And this rule has not been updated since that time. When it was put in place, family farmers were looking at expanding from 50 cows to potentially 300 or 500 cows. Mm-hmm. Now family farmers are looking, maybe they want to expand further. And with that, we have local units of government as well as local citizens are asking questions. And so it would only be right and judicious for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, following the authorities granted by the state legislature in 2006, to take a look at the current rules that are in place.
Cara, this he just said this it would give local governments new standards, new rules and regs, correct?
And that's exactly how the law was designed to work. It was intended that the rules, the regulations would be updated and reviewed every periodically. And that's exactly what's happening here. It's important to know that there are parts of the rule that are outdated and, frankly, simply indefensible. The setbacks are insufficient to protect neighboring property values, as has been shown by some recent Department of Revenue decisions. The odor standards actually allow farms to get odor credits for practices that the University of Missouri has shown in some cases to increase odor rather than decrease it. And the cap on permit fees is a decade old and completely insufficient to cover a municipality's costs. So what happens is that taxpayers are shouldering the burden of that permit review rather than the permitted facility itself.
And John, while we're talking in generalities, before we get into specifics, your group has some concerns about the proposed rule. Do you want to broadly talk about those before we get into the minutiae here?
Sure. We have probably three main concerns, which is we're worried about the new setbacks that Cara just mentioned, that in some cases they'll prevent farmers from being able to expand in place, maybe cause some unintended consequences because of the growth in those setbacks, which is pretty dramatic from what we currently have in the rule. We're also worried about sort of the blurring between this standard and the standard for CAFOs when it comes to runoff management. And finally, we're worried about what local control will mean, particularly with the new setbacks. We think a lot more projects will end up having to seek a local variance. And we're concerned that that maybe gets us back to sort of everything going off on an ad hoc basis at the local government level, which is what we were hoping to get away from when we enacted livestock siting.
Okay, now I've heard the term setbacks twice, so maybe we should start there. What are the current setback standards, and how would the latest version of, let me get it right, ATCP 51, how would it change those standards?
Right now we have a regime of odor scoring, and that determines how far away from a property line a permitted facility needs to be. That system of odor management is, the science behind it is tenuous at best, mm-hmm. let's say. And we have certainly found that in actual practice since 2006, those standards, the odor management and the setbacks that go with them, have been insufficient to protect neighboring property owners from odor. It varies a lot by operation, but what we heard over and over again at the hearings that were held around the state is that people were finding they could not open their windows, they couldn't hang laundry out to dry, they are sickened if they're walking their dog in the place where they've lived for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And that tells us that we're not striking the right mark when it comes to making sure that people are managing the odors on operations. And so that's where the new setbacks come in. They would vary by size of operation and by number of animal units. It's important to note that they are smaller than commensurate standards in other states.
Well, is there any, so these would vary by the size of operation, but is there an actual example? Like, do we have 350-foot setbacks that would be extended, or can we deal in some specific numbers here, Mr. Secretary?
First of all, we need to remember this would only be for new or expanding operations. It would not be for existing operations that are put in, that are currently operating at this at this time. So I just want to be clear.
Well, okay,
and it is a draft rule, but it would only be for new or for expanding operations.
In the Morning State Journal, one of your spokespeople is quoted as saying this would only apply to 1% of livestock operations. Do I have that right?
Of the livestock facilities in the state.
Livestock facilities, 1%.
That's correct.
And only if they want to set up shop new or expand.
That's right.
Everything else would be grandfathered in.
Because they are under the current regulation. That's correct.
So we have now a setback standard for manure, and this would be increased in terms of a wider distance for odor issues from a manure facility.
As the draft rule at this time. And again, I want to repeat, it is a draft rule.
Yes.
We had went to 6 municipalities around the state, had 12 public hearings, and we heard comments from a wide variety of people, from local government officials. They're asking for greater guidance so they can implement because they regulate. The local unit government regulates this. DACAP does not regulate it. Local unit government does. Local unit government is asking for greater assistance. We've heard from farmers, dairy farmers are asking for consistency within the regulation. And then we have also heard from citizens that have shared their thoughts and their ideas about how much they love living in rural communities and are strongly support animal agriculture, but they want to make sure they find a balance here.
John, what about that? What about the proposed rule, which I understand now has not been finally submitted, requiring more of a setback for manure operations? Is your agency concerned about that? I'm sorry, is your organization concerned about that?
We are definitely concerned.
Why?
In part because some of those setbacks are going to be difficult for us to ever meet in where people are currently at. You want to grow probably where you've been, maybe for generations already. So you pointed out that there's already a setback for manure storage, and that's true. What we're doing now in the proposed rule is we're sort of conflating the issue of setbacks and odor scoring, and we're dealing with odor issue through setbacks. And these new setbacks, for example, you might already have a manure pit. You might be seeking to add some animals, grow by 20%. So not necessarily a large amount. You're going to have to go and seek a new permit. And if you do that...
Seek a new permit from the locals.
From the local unit of government, right?
Because
again, assuming they've adopted livestock siting, which is another important distinction that we haven't even gotten into.
Thank you for making that point. A lot
of local governments have not adopted it. So in those instances, you wouldn't have to seek a permit. But if you live someplace that has livestock siting and you wanted to grow by that 20%, you'd have to seek it. Now, let's say you don't have 600 feet, or maybe you don't have 600 feet in the entire operation. One of the things that we've brought up is what you're going to end up doing is probably abandoning that manure storage, having to buy additional land to build a new manure storage, or maybe having to borrow more and grow even more than you had originally intended because you have to build a new manure storage. So we think there has to be maybe a middle ground that we can find, and I think it's probably out there. I mean, I agree with both what the Secretary said and what Kara said earlier, which is there's parts of this rule that need to be updated. The question is how and under what circumstances do we do that?
John, I appreciate you making the distinction between existing operations and what they will face and what expanding operations will face. I regret that. See, one of the unfortunate things about the comments and the hearings is that many farmers did not understand that distinction. And so I'm very sympathetic to the farmers who came to the hearings and said, this rule would put my operation out of business. That's simply not true. No one's going to tell someone that they have to pick up the manure pit and move it. And unfortunately, that was the understanding that many of those farmers had when they were raising concerns. I care a lot about those people who want to begin an operation, and I want to make sure that the rules that we have in place will serve them in good stead. And I am haunted by the reaction of the Manitowoc County conservationists in this ATCP 51 development process, mm-hmm. who said, I'm talking to a farmer right now who followed the rules and now says, those setbacks aren't big enough. I'm causing problems for my neighbors that I never wanted to cause, and I wish that the rule had told me to make the setback greater because I was following the rules, but the rules didn't do right by my neighbors. And we shouldn't send anybody else down that road.
Any PS on that, Mr. Secretary?
I would just say that those rules were put in place in 2006 when Wisconsin animal agriculture looked different than it looks today. And that is the reason why it is important that we update a rule. We have a technical advisory committee that is asked to meet every 4 years within our state statute. The legislature asked DACAP to convene a technical advisory committee to make recommendations on how to update this rule every 4 years. Those technical advisory committees met in 10, 14, and 18. We're now updating a rule. It's been 13 years. So, again, Wisconsin agriculture continues to grow and evolve. It is something that's very important to all of us as residents of this state to make sure that Wisconsin remains America's Dairyland. And we believe a draft rule, and it's just a draft. And, you know, it's very important that we find a balance to make sure we continue to move forward.
What role do nitrates play in this debate?
Well, again, it's always important that a farmer make sure that they balance P, K, and N, phosphorus and nitrates with potassium in order to grow high-quality feed in order to feed their animals. Mm-hmm. So this rule is not focusing on nitrates. That is a separate rule in which the Department of Natural Resources would have oversight
so
on that.
So it's not a direct issue in this rule?
Car. I will say that one positive element of the proposed draft is giving towns and counties a greater incentive or the opportunity to review nutrient management plans to make sure that permitted operations have sufficient acres on which to spread manure. So that's a real linchpin in managing nutrients like nitrogen. One of the things that we heard in the hearings and one of the things that I hear in my time in rural communities is that in some cases, when a permitted operation submits a nutrient management plan, they have listed acres that the owner of those acres did not give them permission to use. That's troubling. And it goes to whether if they don't actually have permission to spread manure, including nitrogen, on those acres, then the question is, where is that manure actually getting spread? And the ATCP 51 rules are a step forward in making sure that the acres listed in a nutrient management plan are actually the acres receiving nutrients. Because if they're not, then we're maybe overspreading in some places. And that's what gets us into the kind of well contamination that we're seeing
now. That we're finding with some of these readings and test results.
Right.
John, anything on the issue of nitrates?
Well, both this rule and the two rules that we're going to be looking at separately that really are specific on nitrates.
From DNR?
They still would look at just a very small portion of the overall sort of issue that we have with nitrates. Kara is correct that manure can be a source of nitrates in drinking water, but as can commercial fertilizer. And if we look at where we have our highest levels of nitrate contamination, it's usually in areas that are heavily row-cropped or specially cropped. And that's not surprising because, again, it's commercial fertilizer that's the problem. Not to say that manure doesn't play a role. It does, and it can. At the same time, the dairy rotation can also play a role in positively impacting nitrates by us growing alfalfa and other things that fix nitrogen out of the system. So it's complicated, basically, is what I'm saying. Right. And again, when you go at, we're looking at just a small subset of the livestock operations, No big fix for nitrogen in our state can occur by looking at just a small subset of livestock operations. No fix could come from looking at all livestock operations, which no one's suggesting was what we're trying to do here anyway.
The segment of our ag industry that would be most affected by the draft, there I said it again, draft, right, mm-hmm. Mr. Secretary?
Draft.
Is it dairy or is it poultry or is it pork? Is dairy concerns driving the biggest driver of this, sir?
Well, dairy contributes $44 billion annually of the $105 billion that agriculture contributes to our state's economy annually. And I want to repeat that. Agriculture contributes annually $105 billion to our state. Of that, $44 billion comes from dairy. We have a very advanced, sophisticated, and very important dairy infrastructure in our state. It starts on our farms. But we produce some of the highest quality dairy products. The world wants our products. So we always are paying important attention, much needed attention, to what's happening with animal agriculture, particular dairy. Dairy has shared their thoughts and their ideas on this rule. We are listening to that. We have also heard from local units of government officials who've been very clear with their thoughts and ideas of what needs to be done, as have residents in rural areas. So again, part of the rulemaking process is to make sure that we listen. We move forward with public hearings. This is the first time in 13 years that there's been public hearings on this rule. And I think it's important that we do that. And our board, our DACAP board, saw to it that not only did we have public hearings, but we have more public hearings. So we had 12 public hearings in order to listen.
Well, you mentioned the $105 billion impact, 44 of which comes from dairy.
Yep.
Then I want to get you to respond to a comment made at the press conference yesterday in opposition to the draft. And that 11 groups, including the Farm Bureau and WMC, and at that, one speaker said the proposed rule, now in draft form, would, quote, put a halt to livestock expansion, close quote, in Wisconsin. Do you and Cara want to respond?
Well, I don't believe that that is the case. I think Wisconsin and Wisconsin dairy in particular is it's the greatest place in the nation in order to produce milk. Produce high-quality milk with the kind of infrastructure that we have here. We have the service industry that helps supply the needed goods the dairy industry relied upon. We have an excellent University of Wisconsin College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. We have specialty cheesemakers. This is the best place in the nation, and I would argue in the world, to produce dairy products. That's a very strong statement was made. I recognize that. I just want everyone to know that I and the governor and all of us are very interested in continuing to grow animal agriculture, particularly dairy in this state, and we're going to make sure that the residents of the state recognize how important agriculture and dairy is by listening to their thoughts and their ideas to make sure that when we move forward together as America's Dairyland.
Kerr, I'm struck by the split. Your group is interested in having these draft rules go forward and be adopted,
yep.
And the Farm Bureau is on the other side. Do you want to respond to some of the comments maybe at yesterday's press conference, please?
We have a choice right now, and that is between expanding big and expanding smart. And our view is that the smart road is the right road, both when it comes to ATCP 51 and making sure that expansions happen in places where they're appropriate and not where they are not. And also with regard to the profitability of dairy farms as a whole. And so Wisconsin Farmers Union, through our Dairy Together effort, has been undertaking a really comprehensive effort to make sure that dairy expansion is profitable for those farms, because we care deeply about not just the number of cows, but the number of dollars that land in a farmer's pocket. And so we want to make sure that the expansion that happens is smart for the communities. Right now, for example, compared to that $1,000 permit fee that a municipality can charge, they can only repair 1/10 of a mile of road. And so if we continue to expand the heavy truck traffic on the roads without commensurately allowing towns to recoup their costs, then we're not being smart about the growth, and we're not doing anybody a service by expanding in that way.
John, I respect your coming on so as you represent an organization that has concerns, but do you agree with the statement yesterday that if it's adopted, it would, quote, put a halt to livestock expansion in Wisconsin, close quote?
So I think I'm probably living in sort of a middle ground between what Kara just commented and that comment. That's not true. People could still expand. But would it halt people from expanding, some people, or discourage them from coming here? I do think that's also true. Would it halt some people who are good projects, who are smart projects? Karen and I have talked about this one in the particular example in the past. It's one that we ran the numbers on back in 2017 when this draft was previously floated. It's a family farm, young couple, dairying in Walworth County. They want to grow from 200 to 400 cows. That would not make them a large dairy. It probably wouldn't impact their neighbors that much differently than they're being impacted now by living next to a dairy. There's no way for them to meet the setback. There has to be a way for us to make both work, and I think there is. But I want to see that couple grow and stay here if they want to grow and stay here. And I think we all probably do. They're the exact kind of farmer we want in the state, which is a young farm family that wants to be here and wants to be here for the long haul.
And you're concerned that the last draft of the proposed rule would prevent them because they couldn't meet the setback requirement?
That's correct.
Overall question, did Wisconsin approve too many CAFOs in the last 8-10 years, Mr. Secretary?
Well, DACAP does not approve CAFOs.
That is something the Department of Natural Resources
would approve.
Were too many CAFOs approved by state government in the last 8-10 years?
The state legislature granted DACAP the authority to come up with some guidance to provide for local units of government. The local units of government made those decisions. So I'm going to respectfully defer to our local units of government on that decision.
Very diplomatic answer. But Kara, did we?
Let's look at the facts. Here's what we know, that in communities that have many small and medium-sized farms, they have 55% greater economic growth and vitality than in communities with a few large farms. And that's something that I think every town and every county has a right and a duty to take into consideration. We want not just cows, but we want economic vitality in those communities. And so the idea behind ATCP 51 is to provide some modicum of local control for those communities. And so that's what I hear from our members in rural areas, is that the smallest unit of government is the best unit of government. And I am surprised and troubled to see other farm groups arguing against local control, because what I hear from rural residents is that's precisely what they want.
John, it's only fair to ask the same question to you. Did Wisconsin approve too many CAFOs in the last 8-10 years?
So I'm not going to punt quite as much, but I would say it's a DNR issue. And so should be separate and kept separate from this discussion to some degree. But no, I don't think so. I mean, the reality is those rules are pretty stringent against CAFOs. They come from the federal government. Only farms that could meet those standards were permitted and allowed. That's what's occurred. That doesn't bother me. It doesn't. I disagree with my colleague here about the importance of size as it relates to economic vitality in rural communities. I do agree with her that it's important to have farms in rural communities still, because we're important to the economic engine. We pay the property taxes and things like that. But I do think that large farms still have a role to play when it comes to the economics. And even though she's about to pull out the study that shows what she's telling me, and it's not that I don't believe the study, Kara, what I'm saying is without those farms growing, maybe there wouldn't be farms at all or animal agriculture at all in those areas. We don't know that. I don't necessarily take it to mean that big farms put small farms out of business. There's plenty of small farms that have a symbiotic relationship with their bigger neighbors. Maybe they raise young stock for them, or they help them with manure storage if they don't have storage of their own, especially in wintertime. So those relationships exist. So I'm not sure it's as simple as just pro or we have big farms or we don't have small farms. It's not as easy as we have too many big farms or not enough small farms. The fact is we're lucky we have farms, and I want to see farms of all sizes continue to do well.
Okay, Kara reached for that document for a reason. What's the takeaway, ma'am?
Yeah, here's the bottom line of this paragraph. Local communities suffer the negative economic byproducts of large animal livestock without the attendant economic benefits.
And as a journalist, I've got to ask what you're quoting from.
This is from the Appraisal Journal. Related to property values as one of the key concerns, animal operations and residential property values.
Okay. Mr. Secretary, what's the potential synergy with DADCAP's proposed rule in the federal government? Would it set tougher standards in the federal government? Are the feds likely to wave their hands and say, here?
Well, this is something in which we communicate regularly with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Natural Resource Conservation Service. We also work with our partner agency here at the state level, the Department of Natural Resources. The federal government has no issues with what we're doing here and what we're proposing. I just want to make sure that everyone recognizes the fact that this was put into place in 2006. It was passed by the legislature. The legislature asked DADCAP in order to provide our local units of government with some assistance, some tools that they can use when livestock operators want to set up shop or, quite frankly, expand in their local units of government. And so that is what this does. We do not regulate. All we're providing is we're providing them with a toolbox in which these local units of government then can make their own decisions if they permit this or not.
Process question. How far along are you in version 3 of the draft rule, Mr. Secretary?
I believe that is the case, but I can tell you that this came in 2017. Not my most recent predecessor, but the Secretary Brancel, when he served as DADCAP Secretary, came from the Technical Advisory Committee in 2017, in which they came with some proposals, some ideas.
So you've had a technical advisory committee. You've had public hearings. When will DADCAP? When do you anticipate publishing a final rule?
Well, the work is really beginning right now because we heard an awful lot of comments from individuals in regards to this draft proposed rule. So we're in the process of summarizing those comments. We want to be able to share those comments to the 9-member DADCAP board in order for them to learn what we have heard from residents around the state. And once we do that, we'll get greater direction from our DADCAP board.
Would you like to have the board adopted by some time deadline, sir?
Well, our scope statement, which provides us the authority to do this, expires in February of 2020. So this is the scope state that we the time frame that we do have. And I will just say that this scope statement, giving us the authority to move forward with the rulemaking, was granted by former Governor Walker. And again, we're just moving forward on the timetable here. But again, this is the first time in 13 years in which there's been public hearings.
If adopted by the board, it would then go to the Assembly and Senate?
Who would then submit it to the legislature.
Who would submit it to the legislature.
That's correct.
Could the legislature block it permanently or temporarily? This staying in the process, the wonk side.
Well, the legislature obviously could rewrite the statute completely if they so desire. They could make tweaks to the statute if they so desire. They can. They obviously have the final authority on what happens with this given rule. We will see what happens as we go forward on that.
Okay, he's very diplomatic. But now we get into the politics of it. I mean, do you think this is, Kara, do you think it's going to have to be changed to have a chance of having the Assembly and Senate leaders sign off on it?
Well, we have the middle road, which is the one where everyone comes to the table and compromises. Unfortunately, what we saw yesterday was some groups saying, we refuse to come to the table. And then there are the two poles, which is that nothing happens. The other pole is that the dissatisfaction with ATCP 51 is so great that we eliminate it entirely and go back entirely to local control. That's what Minnesota has, for example. And I think we run the risk of swinging to that pole if we ignore the very legitimate concerns that a lot of community members have and fail to go forward with some of the acknowledged problems that we have. For example, one of the elements of the rule is requiring periodic inspection of manure storage facilities. Why do we need that? Because we know that at least in two documented cases that I know of, one in Jefferson County, one in Richland County, manure storage facilities failed within weeks of being built. That means that manure is leaking into groundwater, causing well contamination in neighboring wells. And so it's only reasonable that those facilities be periodically reviewed. If we don't move forward with these rules, we miss the opportunity to solve that problem and many others.
John, I'm going to give you a chance to be the great compromiser here. What changes would you like to see in the latest version that your organization could support?
So I do think we need to look at the setback distances. They might need to be modified from where they currently are. Some of the ways in which you can buy back parts of your setback, which are allowed under the current draft, those could be modified. One of our biggest sticking points is right now in the current odor scoring system we have, we measure distance by nearest affected neighbor, not property line. And for us, that's a big difference, and it is a big difference in the landscape, so we'd like to see that changed. Then as far as the treatment of vegetated treatment areas, which we haven't even talked about, and it's too dense of a topic maybe to bring up just in passing, but at least trying to make sure that we really are being honest about there's two different distinct standards when it comes to runoff management. The CAFOs are held to a zero discharge standard, and that farms that are siting don't necessarily need to be held to that. They're held to a substantial discharge standard, and that should be treated differently and should actually be different in fact, not just in words alone.
Mr. Secretary, yes. Do you expect the final draft to potentially incorporate some of the concerns of John?
Well, it's going to be balanced. We have to find balance. I think that this is very good for the state of Wisconsin that we had this process, that we had the 12 public hearings located in 6 different locations. We hear and we learn the fact that, you know, people do care a great deal about their rural communities, the farmers that live in those rural communities, and they want to see them succeed. And I think that that's important. This is a tough job. We all realize that. But the thing is that we're going to get there. I appreciate all the comments that have been shared here. While our official public comment period ended on Friday, September 13th, it's always good to hear thoughts and ideas because I think we all want the same thing, and that is for Wisconsin agriculture to succeed.
Gary, I'm not trying to pick a fight, but how reasonable are some of the changes that John suggested?
Well, it's a striking difference from the message from Dairy Business Association and Farm Bureau just yesterday when they were saying there's no change that will get us on board. We're asking the DACAP board to stop moving forward. And what's concerning about that is that we have some real problems in rural Wisconsin. We have a downward spiraling farm economy. We have people who can't drink their water. We have roads deteriorating at a rapid rate with towns not able to repair them. And ATCP 51 isn't the cure-all, but it's part of the solution. And so to have groups like Dairy Business Association, Farm Bureau, and others refusing to be part of that conversation and asking for the conversation not to go forward is a missed opportunity. And we would, as Farmers Union, feel very differently about that.
Steve, could I respond to that?
Yeah, sure.
I would just say that I don't think that was the message that was sent yesterday. Maybe that's what ends up, because reporters end up sometimes selecting the most hardline quote they can find to put in their article. But I don't know if she attended the press conference. I was off. It was my wedding anniversary, so I apologize. I wasn't there. But I do know some of what was said. And it included things about how there could be changes. We don't want it moving forward without changes. Some of the same ideas I just pitched you on things that could be changed, I pitched when I had to testify at public hearings with Kara in the audience and the secretary in the audience. So they know that we're willing to talk about things that have to be different. It's not a hard line in the sand. I haven't heard you mention too many things that you're willing to give up in our past conversations. So we probably both have to do that. But that is going to be something that we have to get to mutually. Well, otherwise, we're not going to get there.
An important process element is that if this rule doesn't move forward, it dies. Yes. Because of the scope statement. So it's disingenuous to say that anything other than moving forward is an actual real participation in the process. By calling on the DACAP board not to move forward, you're calling on the revision to die.
Well, okay, we're almost out of time, and I want to ask this, just playing along on what was just said. If this rule died, impact, John?
I think we'll likely see another scope statement. If not now, then soon.
Impact?
Declining Kara? Property values, leaking manure pits, towns and town residents shouldering the financial burden for what should be shouldered by the operation.
And I, as the secretary, you should have the last kick at that question. Impact if it died, sir. You don't want it to die, but if it did.
Well, I think it's important. I will just say again, I really appreciate all the comments that have been shared. I think that this is an important debate that this state needs to have. It is having right now. I appreciate the energy that both Kara and John have brought to this discussion. I think it's very important. But for Wisconsin dairy and Wisconsin agriculture to move forward, we need to recognize that we're in this together. This isn't, we're not like other states. We just don't have pockets of dairy in a corner of our state. It's all over our state. All 72 counties, 5.7 million people that live in this state recognize how important dairy and animal agriculture is to the state. Our license plate reads America's Dairyland. That's more than a slogan. That's who we are as a people. We need to come together. And I will say this. I am sad that the headlines that are coming out of various press conference talks about animal waste and what's happening as far as various discussions on ATCP 51, when we need to recognize the fact that we've got a healthy, nutritious product that we want to sell consumers around the world, that the consumers at the end of the day, through their buying choices, are making a determination if they're going to purchase an almond juice or actual milk that comes from a family farm here in this state. Let's make sure that we tell the story of Wisconsin dairy and Wisconsin agriculture. And if we start getting into discussions about, you know, who's going to survive and who's not going to survive and what this means as far as will people actually stay in our state and produce milk, that's not a good discussion for us to have. Let's have a discussion about making sure that we provide the consumers with the healthy products that they want to feed their family. And that's what I want to be able to do with DACAP. So, again, thank you.
Well, thanks very much. It's a very important issue. I want to thank State Ag Secretary Brad Pfaff, Kara O'Connor, the Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and John Holyvote, Director of Government Affairs, for, as you just said, a very important issue, complex issue. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol. Wisconsin Eye would not exist without generous donors like you. Please visit wisi.org to make a donation today.